So just a reminder, if you weren't on the call yesterday, or if you're new to Zoom, there's two views. There's what's called speaker view, where you'll get whoever's speaking in a great big picture and a couple other people, or there's gallery view, where you get to kind of watch everybody over a set of couple pages. So usually for most people, being in speaker view is more helpful because you get to see who's speaking. So we're going to use the same structure as yesterday, basically. So I'm going to talk about impact and transformative coaching, and then I'll take some questions as they come, if you've got them. And then there are people who've requested sort of laser coaching sessions, and I'll do one or two of those as time allows, take a couple more questions if they're there, and then we'll go home enriched, enlivened, transformed, and ready to do it again tomorrow. And so today's topic is impact. And that's what also the topic of one of the three live intensives. So the way that I've restructured the Academy this year is, instead of there being sort of four sessions and doing them around the world and then lots of masterclasses in between time, all around the same thing, I'm doing three slightly longer intensives. So there are going to be 3 5-day chunks where it's going to be 5 days of us talking, you doing exercises, you actually doing coaching with one another and with people that we're bringing in from outside the group as well. And then in between times, there's going to be 3 different kinds of masterclasses. So there are going to be what we call grounding masterclasses, which is going to be people talking about the three principles, talking about the inside out understanding. There are going to be coaching masterclasses where some of the best coaches I know who work this way will actually work with a client in front of the group, and then you'll be able to ask them questions about what you see. And then there'll be business building masterclasses where I bring in people who are actually pretty good at making money doing this to talk about how they do it, and you know, also to kind of coach you through how you can, you know, build your business and make your living as you do this work. And for the three intensives, the three live sessions in Venice Beach, we're doing them right. I found a yoga studio that's right on Venice Beach Boardwalk. So you go in and it's like zen and beautiful and peaceful. And then you step out and there's half naked men roller skating with boom boxes. It's kind of surreal, and the ocean's there as well. So I looked for, well, what are the sort of categories that I wanted to cover in the live intensives? And the first one will be insight. We're going to spend 5 days looking at the relationship between insight and transformation. And that's going to be the foundational piece for you as a coach, if you're new to coaching, but also if you're an experienced coach, it's going to kind of redirect your attention towards something that's probably going on in your best sessions anyways. But when you start to focus on it, when you start to aim towards it, you'll find your results accelerate. You accelerate the learning curve, and you start to have more of an impact more quickly, which is then after you've gone away and done coaching and gotten supervision on your coaching, you'll come back and we'll talk more about impact, what I'm going to talk about today. What is the impact of this work on people? And how does it work? How do we have more of an impact on our clients? And then how do our clients have more of an impact in the world? And then again, there'll be masterclasses, you'll go away, you'll coach, you'll get supervision. When we come back together, we're going to look at innovation and performance and results, which is the things that people will come to you most often for. Is they want to boost their creativity. They want to create something in the world. They want to break through a stuck situation. They want to innovate. They want to transform something. They want to perform at a higher level. They want to create better results more consistently. Today, we're going to talk about impact. And I had this clever idea, and I'm going to go with it, even though it's feeling less clever by the minute. So I heard a sort of, I was reading a history of the medical profession, and Hippocrates is the person that most of us have heard of, the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. And what I didn't realize is that Hippocrates was the first person to sort of simplify medicine down to four fundamental element. But one is blood, one is black bile, one is yellow bile. I can't remember what the fourth one is. But what was interesting about his approach is that he felt that there were three elements in healing, in difference making. And one was the doctor, one was the patient, and one was nature, the natural forces in life. And so he saw the role of the doctor, the artistry of the doctor, being to facilitate the benevolent healing nature of life in the patient. So it was sort of a trinity. It was a dance between the doctor as facilitator of natural forces that would heal the patient with the patient's participation. And that's very like what we do. That's very like transformative coaching, where you're facilitating a deeper nature in people, which not only heals in the physical sense and in the mental sense, but also creates. And working with them and with these natural principles, their lives unfold, their lives bloom, they begin to thrive at higher levels, or if they were already thriving in some areas but not others, a more stable platform comes in underneath. Now, the second doctor who really changed medicine was Aesculapius of Bithynia or something like that. Please don't hold me to that. I'm probably even pronouncing the name wrong, but around, you know, a couple hundred years later. And he introduced the idea that the artistry of being a helper was your direct impact on the patient. He didn't believe in the natural principles. And that's sort of the model that on the whole has come down to us today, is that it's up to us to help them. We are the coach, they are the client. Our brilliance or lack thereof is what's going to determine their results. And we may say things like, oh, no, it's all on the client. But we know it's all in us. And the way we know that we think it's all in us is because we feel really bad if we don't help. We feel like a failure. We try to psych ourselves up as if, you know, if I can just get me right, I'll be able to magic them. And my experience of transformative coaching, of true coaching, of coaching that really works, is it's much more like Hippocrates than Aesculapius. It's much more facilitating something natural that's already there in conjunction with your client than it is imposing your will in some way onto them. And so there are three primary things that I've seen that people get from this work. That is the impact, the difference that makes a difference, as we used to say back in my NLP days. And the first is people light up. You know the expression that the lights are on, but nobody's home. My experience of human beings is that there's always somebody home, but the lights often aren't on. They're not connected up. They've become disconnected from the mains, from the electricity of life. And so they're living on battery power. They're living on steam. They're living on chewing gum and what's the little thing with a hamster kind of inside the engine? You lift the hood and the hamster's there with the hamster wheel trying to make it go, right? That's how people get through life. And you can get through life that way. It's exhausting and you never get as far as you think you should, but it's doable. And it's also utterly unnecessary, because we're all on the grid all the time. We're all connected to what I think of as a divine energy, a spiritual energy. But whether you think of it that way or not, it is the energy of life. It is the animating force. It is the difference between the quick and the dead. I remember when my dad died, and I'd never been around a dead person. And I remember having the oddest experience when I didn't see, he was in an accident and I didn't see the body, but I saw the casket, of just knowing he wasn't in there. And I didn't think of myself as a religious person. I don't have a lot of belief systems around it, but I could tell. And when I talk to people who have been around death, it's a universal. You can tell there's something different between that which is alive and that which is dead. I mean, it sounds kind of obvious to say, but when we connect with that more deeply, we come alive. One of my favorite experiences of that, one of my absolute, where it just hit me so blatantly that I couldn't ignore it, was I was working with a new apprentice, and this was back probably 2009. And it was day one or day two of a course on being financially fearless. And we gave the students a homework assignment, which was to go out and make money over lunch. Like, that was the instruction. And then they were going to come back after lunch and write down how much money they made on the board. And in a group of 17 people, in a 2-hour lunch break, we made over $63,000, which, I got to be honest, was way more than I had thought. Like, I was expecting maybe that they'd come back having made $732.15. But this one woman that I was working with, who was a PhD and you know, so an incredibly bright and educated and accomplished woman, fell apart at the assignment. Literally just was in tears, didn't want to do it, wanted to go home, didn't want to keep going with the apprenticeship. Just, it was all too much. And I remember sitting with her and not knowing what specifically to say or do, but understanding how it works, that we get caught up in our thinking and it seems really real to us. And then we wake up from our thinking and we're connected back up to this universal energy, this universal intelligence. And so I was just sitting with her really talking, and she got quiet, because that's what happens when you don't rev people up, is they quiet down. And then she looked down. And when she looked up, it really was like somebody had switched on the electricity in a Frankenstein movie. Her eyes were glowing. And she had this big grin on her face. And she said, "I know what I can do. I'm going to sing Gershwin." Now, of all the things that this PhD candidate might do to make money during lunch, that was not the one that had occurred to me. But the point was, and I think she made like $31. She just went up to people and started singing to them, and some of them gave her money. But it was the aliveness that came through her, the confidence that showed up in a heartbeat, the joy, the inspiration. And what drew people to her was that, and that light never went back out. And that's why it was so dramatic to me. The before and after was so stark, I couldn't ignore it. So a huge part of the impact of this work is coming alive. You know, Joseph Campbell, the sort of, I don't know what you would call him, but he was, you know, he talked about the power of myth and wrote more than anyone I know about mythology. And he's the person who "Follow Your Bliss" came from Joseph Campbell. And he used to say that people aren't searching for the meaning of life. They're searching for the feeling of being alive. And that's a huge part of the impact of this, is we come alive at a deeper level. Now, that has a knock-on effect. So you've probably heard the expression, all boats rise with the tide. Well, when you come alive, when you hook back up to this universal energy at a deeper level, when you plug back into your innate wisdom and your innate well-being, you do better, right? You do better across the board in every area of your life. You feel better, so you get healthier, because there's more well-being and endorphins that flood your body. And it can even reverse genetic traits. If you've looked at some of the epigenetics research, there's research into the principles in epigenetics and how just flooding your body with good feeling is not just healing in the moment, but can actually change the direction of cellular development. It makes you smarter, because there's less interference in your head. There's less noise in your head. So it's easier to just kind of look outside and know what to do with common sense, and look inside and be guided by our best wisdom, our inner GPS, our inner knowing. We connect with people more deeply because we're not lost in our head. So we naturally connect. You take any two people without reasons for them not to, and they will fall in love. Right? That's what shipboard romance is. That's what babies are. Right? There's no filter between you and them. And so you fall in love because we are at some level made of that. We're connected in that way. So your relationships get better. So on and so on and so on. But there's a third level of impact that is harder to describe, though you may have experiences of it. And it's the world gets more fluid and less static. Reality becomes a bit more like a hologram and a bit less like a solid. It becomes more like the Matrix, where the impossible becomes possible. And I was thinking about how to kind of illustrate that. And what came to mind was something that is very low key. So I'll do the low key one, and then I'll do a big key. I don't think that's a word, but you know, a sort of a bigger one. So I remember, and some of you who follow me, you know, probably know the story that one day my wife and I, Nina, we get into an argument about milk. It was tea time. There was no milk, which is pretty bad in my house. And I thought she was going to get the milk. She thought I was going to get the milk. So we kind of got into an argument about it. And then I stormed out to get the milk. And I had a thought on the way to the shop that I'd never had before, which is, if my reality is created from thought in the moment, I wonder what I'll be thinking when I come home. Like, I wonder what my reality will be when I come home. You know, will it be the same? And I thought, oh yeah, of course it is. You know, look, this was important. We were out of milk. You know, we're still going to be at it. And I got to the shop and had another new thought, which is like, wow, I wonder what Nina will be thinking when I get home. Like, will she be in the same reality? You know, the milk crisis of 2014. And then I thought, oh yeah, she will. She's going to be mad at me. And then on the way back, I had the weirdest sensation of being kind of excited to see what happened. Instead of dreading it or planning my speech for when I returned, whether it was going to be an apology or whatever it was going to be, I just was like, oh, I wonder what we're both going to be thinking. And I wonder what experience we're going to have. I wonder what reality is going to get created when I walk back through the door. And it was the damnedest thing, because I would have bet money that it would have been a frosty cup of tea. Now, we would have been over it by the evening. Let me make clear, you know, we're not that bad. But you know, that was my expectation. Well, I walked in the front door in this kind of very open, very curious place. And Nina came right over to me, gave me a big hug and apologized. And we had the best cup of tea ever. And I remember thinking, holy crap, I would never have reckoned on that. I'd have never thought that that could just change, because I didn't come back already knowing how it was going to be. And for me, the most interesting thing about that was recognizing that had I not been open to reality being fluid, if she came up and hugged me, I would have in my head gone, you're not getting away with it that easy. Right? I would have held on to my righteous anger about the milk incident. And it was so cool in such a minor way. Now let me go from the, you know, the mundane to the more significant. I had a client come out because she hated her colleagues. She felt she was mistreated at work. She felt she was, you know, emotionally abused, and she wanted to kind of find the strength to either leave her work or face up to them. And we had a transformative conversation. We worked together. I sort of showed her as best I could where her experience was coming from. And more than that, we kind of rested in the feeling of being plugged in, of being alive, of the deeper mind. And so she was in a very different place when she left. And I called her, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks after she'd been out, and I said, how's it going? And she said, great. I said, how's it going at work? She said, oh, great. I said, well, how's it going with the people? You know, how have you found your, you know, have you been handling the, you know, their behavior better? And she said, oh, well, I haven't had a chance to put it to the test. And I said, well, I thought, you know, have you not gone back to work? She said, no, I have. It's just for some reason, everybody's been really nice to me since I got back. See, we think that the world is constant and we're the variable. But thought is the variable, which means the world is as fluid as we are. You know, another example, I was working with a COO and you know, again, very successful, but in over her head. You know, she'd been promoted up quite quickly because she was great at what she did. But she really felt over her head. And I remember our first conversation, she said to me, I mean, how do other COOs deal with this? And I said, well, they become alcoholics, their marriages fail, they fall apart. It's like, it's really difficult, but it doesn't have to be that way. And so we spent time together. We, you know, again, we found that space inside and we sat in it. We let it do a lot of the work. And I spoke as best I could. I pointed to the truth of how the mind works. And by day three, she was in the world just looked different to her. And she wanted to do an exercise. She wanted to, she said, can we think through what it'll be like when I go back with this new understanding, how I'll be different in dealing with what goes on at work? And I said, well, there'd be no point at all because you're not going back to the same job you left. It's not that the world is constant and we change. It's that thought changes, and the world is made of thought. The Greek philosopher Heraclitus said, you can never step in the same river twice. And the reason that there are so many miraculous transformations in this work, whether they're subtle, like the great tea incident of 2014, or they're dramatic, like my client's experience of going back into what she had experienced as an emotionally abusive environment and finding it loving and supportive, is that the world is nonlinear. We have cause effect wrong. And when we wake up to this at deeper levels, we're able to experience the fluidity of the world more. And the metaphor, so actually, before I get into the metaphor of it, here's what it seems to me are the two elements of impact. And the first is that when we rest in well-being, when we rest in peace, when we sit in our own aliveness, our own power, our own loving, our own highest self, whatever language occurs to you to describe that, it does something for us. It heals us. It informs us. It enlivens us. It animates us at a whole other level so that when we show up completely differently to how we were showing up before. And that impacts people. You know, George Prensky talked about it. I was teaching a productivity weekend with him last weekend, and he used the analogy of a suntan. He said, you don't have to do anything to get a suntan but sit in the sun. Well, you don't have to do anything to come to life other than sit in aliveness. You don't have to do anything to get all the benefits of that other than simply be exposed to it. I sometimes use the metaphor of a coaching session as stepping into a hyperbaric chamber, an oxygen-rich environment, where the reason people train in hyperbaric chambers is because that extra oxygen infuses into the bloodstream. And when they leave the hyperbaric chamber, they have almost superhuman abilities, relatively speaking, because there's so much more oxygen in the bloodstream. And then the effect of that fades over time. Well, similarly, a coaching session, a transformative coaching session, is like stepping into a spiritual hyperbaric chamber, where you get so infused with spirit that when you step out, everything that seemed difficult seems easy, relatively speaking, because there's so much more about you. And then ultimately, you learn that the hyperbaric chamber isn't the coaching room. It's you. It's your own deeper nature. It's what happens when you go inside. Now, the other thing that I see have that kind of impact is when people see truth or hear truth. And the only way I know of doing that is to see truth for yourself and point people to it as best you can. And when people see something true about life, something more true. They see it insightfully, not as an idea, but like getting a joke. The penny drops and the gumball comes out. It changes them fundamentally. It impacts them at a fundamental level. So, obviously, we're going to take 6 months to talk about this, but I wanted to kind of present that as a sort of an overview, as a jumping off point for a bit of conversation now. So what I'd love is if you've got a question, you go down to the manage participants button, and you'll see a little hand next to your, I think, actually I have a different screen than you, but I'm pretty sure you see a little hand that you can press, which will raise your hand. You can also type into chat and we might find you that way. Yes, Pearl, you will be able to hear the recordings. I'll take a couple questions if they're there. And then I want to jump into a coaching session or two from the people who wrote in earlier. So let's go with Rex. Hey, Rex. Oh, I thought, yeah, there you are. Oh, no, I keep on muting you and it keeps remuting. I don't know if Annette and I are working across purposes here. Go for it.
Okay. So bizarrely, I've listened to what you've said and you know, it's beautiful and I really engage with it. But some part of my brain while I'm doing it keeps on saying to me, just go to sleep. Mm. And I'm thinking, what on earth is going on? Why is it that I'm so want to be listening and so want to be completely engaged? But some part of my brain is just trying to put me down to sleep.
Well, I can make up two different things, both of which are plausible. Okay.
Oh, good.
One is that there is a, you know, this would be the sort of spiritual explanation, right? The spiritual warrior explanation, which is that the ego knows that it's, you know, it's being called out, that it's being confronted, and it doesn't want to be confronted. It doesn't want to be exposed, because the ego in spiritual tradition, regardless of the tradition, is, it's not substantive. It's illusory. So it's like a shadow creature that when exposed to light disappears, not because the light kills it, but because it was never really there. It was just a trick of the light. So there is a long sort of history of people within that notion of the battle versus the ego, that the ego is a clever trickster. You know, you probably, I don't know if you ever saw The Usual Suspects. You know, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was to convince the world that he didn't exist, right? It's like the greatest trick the ego ever pulled was to convince the world that it wasn't in charge, right? And so there's that. That would be one explanation. A second explanation, equally plausible, equally made up by me in the moment, is that it's your own wisdom saying you don't have to try so hard to listen. That actually, hearing is built into the system. Being here is enough. And you're not going to get more by trying. You're going to get less. And then I'll give you a third, which I think is a truer than either of those two, which is we think shit. Like thoughts come into our head. And but for the fact that we think some of them sound important and meaningful, they'll go again in a minute. And that thought about going to sleep is no more or less significant than another thought that might pass through about lunch or another thought that might pass through about a movie you saw last week.
Yeah.
Make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Thank you, Rex. Who else is out there? Any questions that came up in that opening spiel? Okay, let's go to Andrew. Hey, Andrew, you're there. I can hear you.
Okay, good. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I am very well.
Hey, I have a question. we spoke yesterday. I've been coaching for quite a while. I've got a lot of transformative, not from you, but like Newfield Network, ontological mm-hmm. coaching. I'm very interested in learning more from you. Where would be the appropriate place to enter? You know, I've been doing it for 20-something years. I've got lots of clients. I'm successful, but I want to get deeper into the three principles and what you're sharing.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, I'm not a beginner, but I can have beginner mind. So I don't want to be bored, but I don't want to be arrogant, you know, about where I enter.
So without being funny about it, there's this academy that I run, which is called Super Coach Academy, which is specifically for exactly what you're talking about. So about half the people who come on the academy are experienced coaches. They average 10 years or more of experience, but they want to bring this understanding into their work. And then about half the academy have been coaching either for a year or less or not at all.
Okay.
So it is deliberately designed for all levels. And that just informs the layers that I teach and present in. I have literally never heard of somebody in this will be the seventh year of the academy, come away and say they were bored. So I'll put that out. Now, having said that, if you want a gentler introduction, then what I would recommend is the Coaching from the Inside Out self-study program.
Okay.
It's taken from a three-day coach training that I did. And then we kind of chopped it up into sessions and lessons. And that's a sort of a nice way in. And if you, you know, I know some people like to do that first, kind of to see, well, let me try that. And then I'll see if I want to go big picture. So those would be the two ways in. One is the deep dive and one is the survey.
Can I ask a follow-up? How would you distinguish your coaching, the Inside Out method, versus like ontological coaching?
Well, I would do it very carefully because my experience of ontological coaching is somewhat limited. I've done sessions with ontological coaches. I've had ontological coaches come on my programs, but I'm not trained in that. The fundamental difference that I can see, and again, I'm have I put enough disclaimers out yet that I don't know what I'm talking about? Great. It is that in the ontological coaching world, as I've experienced it, the notion is that we're creating our reality usually through language is the way I've heard it talked about most. But that it's valuable for us to take charge of that process and do it deliberately. So it tends to be used within an empowerment model.
Yeah.
And this is what I, to contrast it with an empowerment model, call an enlightenment model. Where we recognize that actually anything we do to mess with the system messes us up. Mm-hmm. And that there is a deeper intelligence behind the system that if we get out of the way of it and let that create reality without us interfering all the time, we wind up in much nicer, easier to manage, more successful realities.
Very good. Very clear. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Let's take one more question. I think I saw Carrie there. Let me unmute you, Carrie. And then I'll dive into a coaching session. Hey, Carrie, welcome back.
Hi, thanks, Michael. I had some big insights last night and woke up this morning feeling like that lit up feeling inside. So
great. We're kind of matching today, which I think
Yeah, I know. I saw that. So, I mean, I definitely felt like you were really talking to me this morning. So very cool. My question is, you know, so much of the kind of coaching models out there that are being taught these days everything is focused on results, like concrete results that you can help your clients achieve, because that's what people want. That's what the front door that they come in through are these concrete results. So when doing the transformative coaching, is it more that just this, you know, the three principles and this process that you use, that's what you use to help them get the results that they want? Or does this become more of the front door? You have to get people in through explaining the, you know, three principles process, and this kind of impact is the thing that's going to bring them in the door. Does that make sense?
It does, I think. I mean, I'll tell you the sense I make of it, and you can tell me. So I think the reason that I wanted to do the academy this way next year, where I'm just going to take it and run it instead of kind of farming out bits to other teachers, is because I think too often what's called coaching with the three principles has become a bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
I'll promise you results, and then by the time I'm done with you teaching you this stuff, you won't care that you don't have them. And I think that's a disservice. Now, it is true that when somebody drops out of their neurosis, a lot of the things that they thought they needed and wanted stop being relevant. So there is a truth to the fact that what a client comes to you with may not be what they really want, what they're really looking for, and it would almost be a disservice to help them to achieve it, because it was a means to an end that they didn't need to walk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, I realized at a certain point in my coaching that the most common thing that people came to me for was to make them do what they didn't want to do. And I just thought that was insane, because I would rather help people do what they really want to do. And so for me, the distinction isn't, we're going to get you through the door with the promise of results, but then we're going to give you the real stuff. It's actually understanding how the mind works will set you up to create results at a level way beyond the way you're currently going about it. So George and I taught a workshop on exponential productivity last week. And the point was, the basic premise was, most people think of productivity as being a one-to-one relationship between effort and result. So when they go to something on productivity, they want to know, how can I get more effort out of myself so that I can get more results? Well, the variable in productivity is the ratio of effort to result. So everyone will have the experience of diminishing returns, where you're working three times as hard as you think you should, and you're getting one unit of result. But you also have experiences where it feels like you're hardly doing anything and the results are huge. And that's the direction we want to go in. Because if I can go from 1-to-1 to 1-to-3, where I get three times the bang for my buck, then I can either maintain the same level of effort and get that much more, produce that much more in terms of result. Or if I do up my effort, it becomes exponential, the growth. So that for me is the relationship of an understanding of the principles to creating results. It helps you get so much more in a non-linear way out of what you put in, because it shows you where, it shows you where your bread is buttered. It shows you what you do that actually creates results. So you spend less time doing all the stuff that's visible but not helpful, and you make space for the invisible driving force to come through.
Awesome. Yeah, that helps give me a lot more clarity on it. So brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let me go to, I'm going to do this hoping you're actually here. I had a name all picked out here, Annette. Leslie. I think I actually did see Leslie on here. Sorry, I've got multiple screens. So I don't know, Leslie, if you're there, if you can raise a hand or unmute, or if I made up that you're here. I think I either made up that you're here or... Well, you are. Yay, there you are. Hi.
Hello.
Hey. So what would be, if we were going to have a little chat right now, what would be great to come from it?
What would be great to come from it?
Yeah, like what would you like to come from our time together right now?
I guess some kind of greater clarity about, I think in my email I mentioned I've trained, my NLP trainer and coach, and I've coached quite a long time, and there's some things never worked in a business sense for me. I've seen clients have lovely results at times, and yet for me personally, I've never kind of got my head around the business side of things at all, which means I've always struggled financially. Mm. Even though I've worked with teams and had fabulous feedback, and somehow it's never kind of gone. Nothing seems to go anywhere. So some clarity about how I'm getting in my own way, I guess.
Right. So You think the problem is that you get in your own way?
I can't see what else it can be.
Well, it could be that you're just crap at business.
It could be.
And I don't mean that in a mean way, but it's like, yeah. You know, look, I remember when Oliver, my son, first started playing baseball, he hated it. And I asked him why he hated it. And he said, because I'm crap at baseball. And I said, yeah, but you're five. Like, you should be. I don't think I said you should be crap at baseball, but I said, would you like to get good at it? And he got excited. And you know, sometimes it is just there's some basic skills you don't have. So I'm not saying, I mean, maybe, look, chances are at some level you're getting in your own way.
Yeah.
But we do have a nasty habit of self-diagnosing.
Yes.
Where we assume we know what the problem is and then struggle to fix it. And often it turns out because maybe that's not really the problem.
That sounds quite possible.
Yeah. So if it wasn't like what, explain, if I asked you to present me with a business model for how you were going to grow your business, what would it be? What would your business plan be?
What I've done in the past is it's come from referrals from people.
Right. Okay. But what's done in the past hasn't worked. So give me a better business model. No. And I get we're theorizing here. I'm not actually like looking to hold you to a business model here.
Yeah.
I'm just saying let's look in that direction. What do you suspect if it wasn't up to you, like if somebody else was going to come in and do it,
mm-hmm.
what is it that you would have them do?
Nice question. Be more visible. Go out, maybe do talks, write more. I should just share more, make myself more visible in the community of people who could benefit from whether it's NLP or now three mm-hmm. principles.
Do you know the Welsh comedian Rob Brydon?
Yes.
So I knew Rob, before he was famous, and he was in a radio show that I did in Wales, and he told me how he got his first break.
Okay.
And he does voices, he does great impressions and, back then he was doing them in the shower and he was making himself laugh in the shower one day and he came out really angry because he said to his wife, he said, I'm funnier than all these people and why are they out there working and I'm not working. And she said, Rob, nobody knows you exist.
Yes.
Right. And like, that's a pretty good thing, right? That makes some sense.
Yes.
So, if you aimed yourself in the direction mm-hmm. of being more visible, do you think ideas would come to you about how to be more visible?
Yes, I think they would.
Yeah. And do you think there might be some of them that didn't make you puke when you thought about them?
Probably I could find a few.
Right. And do you think those might be the ones to start with?
Probably. Yes. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
And then as you go, other things will occur to you. But the kind of generic point is one of the main reasons we struggle with things is A, we self-diagnose incorrectly.
Yeah.
And then we go to work on ourselves instead of our projects. Mm. I got to tell you, there's been something so educational living in Hollywood and working with Hollywood people who are often famous and successful. They are so insecure, they have so little self-belief, and it doesn't stop them at all.
Mm.
So this notion that I've got to be, aha, before I can go, it's like, it's crap. It's just
okay, utter. That's good to know.
And you'll have a happier life.
Yes.
That's good too, but it has nothing to do with success.
Okay, well, it's reassuring.
Let me know when you do your first visibility thing and we'll
okay.
All
I
right.
did a big project on last year. I did 90 days of videos, just 3-minute videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it did make a difference. Once the 90 days were up, I stopped.
Yeah.
So yes. Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I
just want to hang on. Let me, how do I get out of this? Annette, I don't know if you, for some reason, my screen isn't responding, so I can't.
I'm here.
I just need to. Oh, she's muted back out. Perfect. There's one other thing that I want to kind of point out in relation to that little conversation Leslie and I just had, which is there's a difference between making yourself do something that you think will help and doing it because you're inspired to do it, right? We can all do anything for 90 days. Like most of us can muster the willpower to do something, but that doesn't really move the needle that much. It gets things rolling, but it's like a flywheel. Like it just gets it beginning to move. You know, if you're going to really benefit from the momentum of the flywheel, you have to keep going. And what keeps us going isn't more willpower. It's that we fall in love with what we're doing. And so that's the problem with behavioral interventions. They can unstick you, but in and of themselves, they're rarely going to take you all the way. And, you know, it was interesting. I had a client who is a business consultant, and I write about him in Supercoach, and I'll sort of tell a short version of it here. But he would come on the call every week and say, yeah, I've got to take this gig. I don't really want to do it because it's a lot of travel and I wish I was home more, but I need the money. And he would do this week in, week out, till it finally dawned on me one day to ask him. And I said, why do you always need the money? And he had some story. And I said, well, look, how many days forward could you live without earning another penny? Like, you know, basically spending as you are, not more, not less, and without earning any more money, how long could you go before you were homeless? And he said, I don't know. I said, well, go find out. Like, come back next time and with a number. And so he came back next time and he was really kind of sheepish because his number was 10 years. So he'd been creating this constant panic, this world of not enough, living inside of it, struggling inside of it, simply because in some ways, some part of him thought it would be helpful to keep himself scared and motivated and miserable and struggling. So I made a deal with him. I said, okay, how long would it take for you to rebuild your business from scratch? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, if you stop doing what everything you're doing right now, and you stop doing it long enough to lose all the momentum, how long would it take you to get back to where you are now? And he kind of thought about it for a bit. And he said, 7 years. And I said, okay, give me 3. And he said, what do you mean? I said, for the next 3 years, you're not allowed to do anything for the money. You're allowed to be paid, but you're not allowed to do it or not do it because of the money. You've got to do it or not because you want to or you don't want to. And let's see what kind of life that creates. Now, it was just something that occurred to me in talking to him. It wasn't something I'd done before or since with anyone. It was kind of what popped up in the moment. Now, he got very excited about this, and he did spreadsheets, and he signed a contract that he wrote about his commitment to do this, and he even had a proviso in there that we worked out that if he had an unexpected expense, like his car, he had to replace his car, that he would take the money that he spent on the car off the back end of the 3 years. You know, I mean, it was incredibly thorough. And so he called, and we were doing it virtually, and he would call in for sessions, and each time he would tell me about a gig that he was offered that he didn't really want, but he should do for the money. And I would say, oh, but you don't do things for the money anymore. And go, oh yeah, I forgot. So then he called me about 5 months in to this little experiment. And he said, look, I've been offered this gig and I'd really like to do it, but there's a problem. And I said, well, what's the problem? And he said, well, they're going to pay me over $1 million. And I said, well, why is that a problem? He said, well, I'm not supposed to do things for the money. And I said, but didn't you want to do the gig? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, then take the gig. It's not like you're not allowed to do it because there's money. That just can't be the decision criteria. So in short, over the course of the year, he decided once that happened that he was going to only run the experiment for a year. He made more than 3 times as much money as he had ever made as a consultant, and he was a fairly successful consultant. And then I lost touch with him for a while. And then he wound up giving a talk about his experience at a business school and sent me a copy of the talk. And when I heard him talk about it, he talked about it as though it had been a trick to get himself to do something different. So sort of like the 90 days well, I'm going to do this for 90 days of videos, hoping it will generate a momentum or get me into the habit or something. He talked about it as if it had been a trick. And in fact, he went back to doing things for the money afterwards, and his life went back to being kind of crappy. And I called him and I said, "What? I don't understand. What happened?" And he said, "Well, the experiment was over." And I said, "I don't think you understand the purpose of an experiment." Right? The purpose of an experiment is to learn something about how life works, to learn something insightfully about how things really work. And what he saw, what he didn't see, but what was on offer for him to see, is that when we don't make it about making the money, but we make it about following the flow of inspiration, the money shows up. When we make it about making the money, we struggle. And that's just a fairly universal thing. There are always going to be exceptions, but it's pretty damn consistent. If you want to make money and you're following your inspiration and you're willing to learn the skills you don't yet have, because there are some business skills that are involved in business, right? There are some selling skills that are involved in selling. There are some marketing skills that are involved in marketing. There are piano skills that are involved in piano playing, regardless of your state of mind. It's just that in a better state of mind, it's easier to learn them. If you're willing to point yourself in that direction, you're going to do really well over time. And that's what I say to anybody who's starting from scratch, is if you're doing this like a network marketing, multi-level marketing thing, oh, I'm going to make money in my spare time being a coach, that's not what we're up to. That's a marketing scheme. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, I don't know. I'm talking about a profession. I'm talking about something that if you're into it, if you're inspired by it, within 18 months, you can be up and running as a business from a cold start. If you already have business connections, it can happen quicker. If you already have business acumen, it can happen quicker. If you catch on fire and you make yourself unbelievably visible and you really go out there, it can happen quicker. But generally speaking, if you're starting from nowhere with no experience and no background, give yourself a little time to learn. Don't think that somehow there's something wrong with you because you didn't become a millionaire in the first week. That's not really how life works. But it can happen a lot quicker than you think. It can be so much more enjoyable than you probably imagine because you don't have to do it the hard way. You don't have to summon up the will and get yourself into state and make yourself do things you don't want to do. I was interviewed for a networking podcast, and this guy, he's a fairly well-known internet marketer. I won't mention him by name, but he wanted me to talk about, you know, how do you get people who don't like networking to network? And it was a really short interview because I said, I don't. Why would I do that? Like, what a terrible strategy if you hate it. Now, there are things you can do that will help you fall in love with most things, right? And we talked a bit about those. And there are things you already are inspired about that you'll find easy to do. But the idea that the purpose of a coach is to make yourself do what you don't want to do is really archaic. This is an inspiration business. And yeah, there's some perspiration involved, but it's good perspiration. Like it's the perspiration that you feel when you're exercising in a way that you love, not the punishment for the extra piece of cake you ate on the way to work yesterday. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about innovation, but I'll actually begin the call with a Q&A. So if there are things that have come up from today that we didn't get to that you want to ask about, we can talk about them during our session tomorrow. And I will look forward to picking up the conversation with you all tomorrow. Thank you, guys. I'll see you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Michael.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.